Take RFM Dunedin with you wherever you go, with podcasts and live streaming of Primo local content. Download the Access Internet Radio app for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store.
This programme was first broadcast on RFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
In the hub, at the hub, on the hub.
Welcome to Arts Hub.
Mind-altering.
Tight lines.
Lively.
The Arts Hub Show. New.
Intelligent.
Rock and roll.
Tasty.
Delightful.
Perfect.
Gorgeous.
Clean.
Okay.
In the hub, at the hub, on the hub.
The Arts Hub Show. Welcome to Arts Hub.
Tongan performance artist Kalasoliete Uhila is the Dunedin Public Art Gallery's 2019 Aotearoa New Zealand Visiting Artist. Through until October 25th, the gallery will be Uhila's open studio and performance space as he develops his newest work, Kapa Mā. Utilising metal cabin bread tins in a drumming performance, the artist will explore Polynesian masculinity, strength, movement and power, and ways of shifting these qualities to examine vulnerability, humility and contemplation. Kalasoliete Uhila's Kapa Mā, powerful performance art at Dunedin Public Art Gallery.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome to the Arts Hub. With us we have Amanda.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going? So Amanda, can you tell us whereabouts you're from?
Sure. So I work at the University of Otago, and I'm currently the Playwriting and Dramaturgy Fellow, which is my second time doing that because it's biannual. So, I'm originally from the States, which you can probably tell from my accent.
Yes, whereabouts?
I grew up in California, but I was living on the East Coast mostly before I came to New Zealand.
Yeah, great, great. And so in terms of being a fellow, have you done that twice, did you say?
Yeah, I got here in 2017, mm-hmm. And I worked for a year. So the way that the fellowship works, it starts in semester two of 1 year, and then I'm here through the summer, and then semester mm-hmm. one of the following year. And then I stayed on an extra semester, partially because of this UNESCO Play Festival, which I've been part of the organizational team mm-hmm. from the beginning.
Yeah, I thought in view of that that we could start talking about the UNESCO, Dunedin being the city of literature.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a little bit more about that, because how old's that? Is that like 6 years old, maybe?
Yeah, so Dunedin became a UNESCO City of Literature in 2014. The Creative Cities Network has been around since 2004. And there's different kinds of UNESCO cities. So, like, Auckland is New Zealand's city of music. Mm. And but Dunedin is the first UNESCO city in New Zealand. So, pretty fancy. And it's quite a...
I'm trying to think of what that's under, actually. It's got quite an interesting kind of name, the committee for that, hasn't it? The UNESCO committee for that. I'm trying to think what they're called. When they developed it in 2004, and when did they first develop that?
2014.
And the policy was earlier, though, wasn't it, that they developed this sort of concept of including, of celebrating things that are cultural but not necessarily cultural.
Oh, right. So that's the UNESCO heritage sites.
Yeah.
I'm not totally an expert on, like, UNESCO history. Mm-hmm. I just know a little bit about it because one of the great things about the UNESCO Play Festival is that it's partially celebrating the university's 150th and mm-hmm. the theater studies' long history of developing new plays and works. But it also involves a connection with the community, so with the Dunedin City of Literature office. And Nikki Page, who works over there, has been part of the organization from the beginning as well, and then also connecting to and reaching out to all of the different UNESCO cities all over the world. So we got over 90 script submissions from New Zealand playwrights as well as playwrights in different UNESCO cities. And we have playwrights coming from different countries as well to see their works, as well as theater companies. So we have people from Melbourne coming, from Heidelberg. We have someone from Iowa City and Seattle. So
nice.
Kind of interestingly, Iowa and Seattle are the UNESCO cities of literature in the States.
Oh, right.
Because part of it is like the city applies. So
yes, that's right.
Yeah, initially I was trying to recruit some of my playwright friends in the States, and I was like, "Well, do you have a connection to Seattle or Iowa?" And they're like, "Why isn't New York a UNESCO City of Literature in the States?" And
like it needs it.
Yeah, like it needs it. We know New York is good for culture, but I think what is kind of surprising is that Art Bereka actually just came. He just flew in yesterday, and he is in charge of the playwriting and dramaturgy programs at Iowa, the University of Iowa, mm-hmm. which is one of the best writing universities in the States for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, if you live overseas, you don't necessarily think of Iowa as being a kind of a hub for really creative new works.
Yeah, I have a funny feeling. I was kind of aware of Iowa. Why? I don't know anyone who lives there, but I guess the people that I do know, I'm Canadian, but the people on the other side who have interacted with Iowa, I'm pretty sure friends have been to festivals there, maybe even specifically theater stuff. Would there be theater stuff as well?
There's a lot of theater writing and happening in Iowa. A lot of amazing playwrights came out of that MFA program. I was kind of stalking their website the other day because I as part of the playwriting fellowship, I teach playwriting, so I was kind of trying to pitch our guests to my students, because I'm having these really amazing dramaturgs from the States as well as New Zealand and the UK come to my classes, but also do talks and panels and new play development workshops. So I was trying to like convince them to come. And one of the things I was saying was, you know, how amazing the MFA playwriting program is at Iowa. And I realized in stalking their website that I had like worked with some of those playwrights or on some of those playwrights' plays in my time in Boston and New York. And I was like, oh, I love those playwrights.
Yay.
Yeah.
So that's great. So you're getting to meet them for the first time or second time now, perhaps?
So, yeah. So Fiona Graham is coming from the UK, and she's a UK-based dramaturg, and she teaches playwriting and dramaturgy at Goldsmiths College at the University of London. And I met her last year because she came over and she worked with my dramaturgy paper that I teach as well. And then Tanya Palmer is coming from the Goodman Theatre in Chicago, and she's head of new play development there, which I'm really excited about. And partially it's so I was her intern in 2012 for dramaturgy, and I was really inspired by her, just the way that she, you know, works with playwrights and just kind of the Goodman Theatre in general. They're such an amazing theatre for developing new work. So that's kind of what made me really passionate about developing new work in particular, because at that point in time, I kind of knew I wanted to be in theater. I knew I enjoyed writing, and I really enjoyed working as a dramaturg, which I guess, should I?
It doesn't hurt to clarify.
Should I clarify what that is?
Yeah.
So dramaturgy is pretty broad, but the way that I see it is that if you're a dramaturg, you're kind of working with the overall shape or structure of a piece rather than the content. So you can be a artistic consultant. You can do anything from, you know, doing research on the play to make sure that it communicates with the audience. So if it takes place in a different, you know, time period or country, making sure that everyone on the artistic team understands the context.
Right.
But then you can also look at the world of the play and work with the playwright and help the playwright make something that's coherent.
Right.
But it has to do with kind of shape and communication and logic, and those are all things I really enjoy. And I really just enjoy theater, really. And I think I didn't know what dramaturgy was for a very long time, but when I was told what it was, I was like, oh, I think that's what I do. Like, I just kind of like hovered around some of my playwright friends a lot, and we would just go on long walks and talk about characters and stories and stuff. And I think I was being a dramaturg, but I didn't know it. And I just really like art, and I care about communication as well, because I think art should be, you know, not just for the artist, but for the audience. And,
oh, definitely.
You know, you want to bring them into that world.
Yeah, that's successful art anyway.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty much all the stuff that you don't actually necessarily see as an audience member, isn't it? It's like your engagement with the character you sort of take for granted sometimes if you're an audience member, but if actually behind the scenes, all the work behind that is extraordinary, isn't it?
There's so many working pieces, and one of the really exciting things about this festival, actually, is that we're letting audience members, the general public, come to some of these new play development workshops, because generally those things are closed to the public because they're generally between the playwrights and any given actors, artistic team, and the dramaturgy staff. Mm. And for me, that's one of the most interesting things that happens. So the public can come to those new play development workshops, and all of our guest dramaturgs coming from all of these amazing places are doing one of those. So they'll be working with two playwrights. So it's a two-hour session, and they get an hour for an excerpt of each play, and then to kind of workshop and talk about the work. And so, yeah, people can see how these discussions happen and how works go from their initial stages to becoming a full kind of coherent thing that they can come to the theater and see.
Yeah, it's I found it a little bit difficult to know exactly what was going on just from the website or from the university part of it, but I bet there is something better out there, is there?
So the best way to figure out what's happening and kind of keep track of all the things that you want to go to is to go to playfest2019.shed, so like the first part of schedule, .com. And then there, it's an awesome website because you can click all these things and add it to your schedule, and then click each thing, and you can get tickets. from SHED.
Yeah.
And it gives you all of the information about what's happening. It's color-coded, so the performances are one color, the new play development workshops are one color. There are panels, so there's a dramaturgy panel and a playwrights panel, so different playwrights who are coming in or from New Zealand will be on that panel, and then I'll be chairing the dramaturgy panel and talking to all the different dramaturgs, and those are this Saturday and Sunday at 3 o'clock in Allen Hall.
It's $10 for most things, or some things free?
So all of the panels and workshops, new play development workshops, are free.
Oh, okay.
And then it's $10 to come to a grouping of three plays.
Oh, yeah, right.
Or you can get a season pass for $60 and then see whatever you want as many times as you want.
Yeah, that's
which
great.
Which is kind of awesome, because then you can see we're doing 26 plays in total, and they're in groups of three. And we're staging, well, the students, really, there are three different papers that have been running to put on this festival, so it's mostly student-run, and they're putting up 20 plays, and then there's six plays coming from a kind of guest artist coming in, so we have a company from Heidelberg in Germany coming and doing a play, and Melbourne, there's Logan Park High School is actually putting something up, which is pretty exciting.
Oh, right.
A former playwriting fellow, Granity Players from New Zealand coming and putting up their own thing. So it's a really excellent opportunity to see lots of different new work, and also, to support, new and developing New Zealand playwrights.
Yeah, so were you part of how big a team did it require, or did you just work like crazy?
I think we all have been working like crazy.
Yeah.
I think the students have it's a really interesting opportunity for the students. Mm. So there are 41 students involved across the three papers.
Right.
And they've been, directing and acting and marketing and stage managing, and they have a Manaakitanga team. So they've been doing so much, and so they've really been able to get experience in all these different parts of theater, but also kind of understand how crazy the real world of theater is, because I think in a university setting, things can be pretty straightforward, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of set up for you.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but in the real world, it's super hectic. So I think sometimes the students have been like, we don't know who the actor is in this situation yet, or, we have to move these things around. Like, why is this happening? And we're like, oh, no, this is how it always happens. This is a new play development. Or working with plays that are, really, really, quite amazing, but it's the first time that they've been staged. So for any playwright, the first time something's staged, you're going to notice, actually, that doesn't quite make sense, and, maybe this doesn't quite work on stage. So you have these young directors working with these new plays, and usually, they're doing plays that, they've seen, they like, they understand, and they've been assigned these plays. So they're having, some pretty incredible real-world experience at university, but, definitely working super hard and... But there's about 100 people involved overall, because they're all being mentored. So I'm doing kind of dramaturgical feedback on 10 plays that I've been mentoring them. And then they have acting mentors and directing mentors. And we've gotten a lot of support from Events Hub at the university as well. And UNESCO City of Literature office, and then if you include all of the guest speakers and all of the playwrights, and it's just a tremendous amount of people.
Yeah.
And does it include the director paper at university? Does it bring so it brings all that
so
in?
So the students currently in the director paper, they're putting on some readings. So there were some plays that we felt we couldn't properly staged for various reasons. Some of the things had to do with casting, which didn't feel like we had the right people, but we could get an actor to come down for a day or something and do the reading. So they're putting on the readings, but a lot of the directors have come out of the directing paper into the UNESCO paper.
Okay. Oh yeah.
Right. So.
So there's actually a UNESCO paper.
There are three.
Three.
Yeah,
wow.
Because we have it at 200, 300, and 400 level.
Great.
Yeah, so the 400 level students have been working all year on it, and the 200 and 300 level just started this semester.
And is that just a paper offered on the years that it's running, the biannual?
No, that paper is the first and probably only time it will be run, because we probably won't host another play festival quite like this that's international in this nature, because there's only ever been one other UNESCO play festival, and that was in 2016 in Heidelberg. And the way that we ended up doing it is Stuart Young, the head of school, he went in 2016 and had quite a nice time, and Kitty Bell, who's a playwright and actually wrote one of the plays for the play festival, went
just,
as well.
Just one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, we're not doing multiple plays by any playwright.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess she's in lots. I saw her last night, and we were talking about the stuff she's doing, and it sounded like she was in quite a few things as well.
Yeah, because we've recruited some actors from the community. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I feel like now I'm talking about two different things. Hold on. So the first thing is that Stuart really enjoyed it and kind of put his hand up to do the next one. So we don't know who's going to do the one after this. Right. But they're probably going to be biannual. But anyway, so the paper's just running so that the students can put up the festival, essentially. And, sorry, what was I saying about... So recruiting local actors. So when we received all of the scripts, I was the one who kind of initially read all of them and compiled them into kind of yeses and maybes and nos, and the 400-level students helped me with the ultimate selection of things. Mm. But what was kind of a really nice surprise was we got a lot of plays that involved very diverse casting, which also made casting really hard, especially just with the students. Because often when you get a festival like this, you'll get a bunch of scripts, and they're written by sometimes, younger playwrights, and they'll write for, 20- and 30-year-old people. Mm. But that wasn't the case. We got lots of plays that involved people of all ages and... kind of different demographics, and we were like, these are really, really exciting plays, but how do we do them with students only? Because, you don't want a student to play, a 60 or 70-year-old person necessarily if that's an important part of the story.
Right.
So we were like, let's just hire some actors. And the students now they have this great experience, acting beside professional actors.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Definitely adds to the mix entirely. Yeah. I was here thinking about, people having to play robots or dogs or, things like that. But
No, that's easy.
Yeah. Costumes make a lot of difference. Yeah.
Wow, it sounds amazing, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. There's a bit of a kickoff today, is that right, at the library?
Yeah.
There's
At 3 o'clock at the library. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that public or not really so much?
It's not super public.
Oh, okay. Well, then I shouldn't have mentioned it. Sorry.
But yeah, it is. But no, it's. I think it's worth mentioning because
it's
a really
space.
Nice thing that the UNESCO, the Dunedin UNESCO office is doing to. Welcome a lot of our guests, and I think it's a really nice gesture because it kind of indicates this relationship that the universities had with the community.
So it's like a porphyry opening up the festival.
Yeah,
welcoming everyone.
Yeah, and not quite everyone's here, but for the people who are here, I think it's you fly into New Zealand, and I think. It's nice to have a welcoming.
Yeah, definitely.
And then tomorrow night is kind of official play opening. So actually tomorrow at 1 o'clock, there's a new play development workshop with Victor Roger.
Oh, yeah.
And then at 6:30, I wrote it down to make sure. Yeah, I don't want to put out any false information. At 6:30, there is a group of three plays. And that should be pretty exciting. And then from there, there's... two or three groupings a day for 8 days.
Right. And whereabouts are they being? Are they held?
They're all at Allen Hall.
Yeah. All at Allen Hall. Wow.
Yeah. All you have to do is locate Allen Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is at the top of the university.
Which is pretty. I think
pretty
iconic.
Much how by Unicol.
Yeah. Yeah. Right across.
Right across from Unicol. It's probably the easiest way.
Yeah. There'll be signs and all that. Jazz.
And just the sound of happiness.
Yeah. The sound of. New play
Smiley
development
faces.
Happening.
I don't know why. I don't know why I said that, but anyway. Yeah. No, it's good. It's you had a thing.
I was going to say it's sort of like in terms of young people, it sort of cements Otago University more as an option for leading into drama as well, I think, because it sort of widens the scope. You know, oftentimes, you know, people doing like two papers a year or whatever in drama and doing an English degree or doing something else, but it sort of broadens that quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For the future.
Yeah, I hope it will kind of, introduce some people to Alan Hall if they don't already know about it. I think sometimes in university, it's pretty easy to just kind of go off into your corner and hang out with the people that are studying the thing that you're involved in, right, and not kind of realize what else is happening at the university. So, I mean, we have an amazing lunchtime theater program.
Yeah,
I used to always go to that when I was at uni.
Yeah, awesome.
Mm.
Yeah.
And every time.
It was one of the things that I kind of fell in love with when I came over here, because I didn't really know what it was. I don't know. I read about it online a little bit, but I didn't quite understand that it was like really proper productions happening, at lunchtime.
And quite lunchtime free theater, as well. Like the content is quite free too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not often that a playwright or, you know, a person learning performing arts can actually, you know, experiment like that.
Yeah.
Have the space to.
And yeah, I think the variety is amazing for sure. And you have some really talented directors putting up work, and sometimes it's, you know, plays written by their classmates. And I think it's been happening for like 35 years, the Lunchtime Theater.
Right.
And
yeah, that's
right. Such a rich tradition. And so, I don't know. I'm a huge fan of like trying to get non-theater people to come to theater, because I think that theater should just be for the people, not for, you know, a select, like, I don't know. Sorry for you guys
peers,
are listening, not looking at me.
Almost.
I just kind of like shook my shoulders in a kind of like hoity-toity fashion. In America, I was making a lot of theater that was very much like for the public and public spaces. And I really want to continue doing that, in addition to just trying to get theater more into the community and have the community feel very welcome. And so hopefully with all these plays happening, people can come and sample some things and see if they like something. You know, theater is so vast. Like, I think, sometimes people see like one or two plays and they're like, I don't like theater, right? But I'm like, well, how much theater have you seen? Like, I've seen a lot of theater I haven't liked, a lot of theater. Like, but I've also seen a lot of theater that I have loved so much.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
You know, there's not, you know, one type of theater. So, and this festival has so many different kinds of plays, different genres, styles, you know, different sorts of people represented. So I think there's something for everybody.
Yeah. I wonder if people feel like, oh, you know, why do I need theater? I can just watch TV. But, you know, it's so completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a totally different kind of communication, because you're there as the audience, and I don't know, you're giving energy back to the performers, and the performers feel connection with you.
Well, that's
it. And you're sitting beside people. I don't know. I think, like, watching something by yourself can be a really meaningful experience as well. Like, I've had great experiences just, you know, with my computer in bed with headphones and, like, watching a movie.
Sure.
And it's really intense and personal. But then that's a completely different experience, You know, I'm in the theater with a non-traditional theater space watching theater with a bunch of people, and it's...
Yeah, it's a different formality as well. It's kind of like, not very social in a sense when you're watching it, because you are, you know, primarily watching it by yourself, even though you're in a room full of people. It's incredibly engaging and social as well. I mean, isn't it? You know, half time, you always end up talking to people, don't you?
That's true.
Afterwards.
But I can just say... This sounds crazy, because it kind of is, but when I used to go to a lot of theater when I lived in Toronto, I remember feeling at one point that I had to restrain myself from eating the actors, if that makes any sense. But I mean, I just had such a strong feeling of connection with the people on stage. Sometimes it literally was just about, wait, you know, you're not allowed to stand up and get on that stage right now, so, you know, go after them. But that was almost what it was like. It was that level of intensity.
Definitely.
Okay, anyway, crazy. eating the actors.
When I think of that, actually, I think of seeing Number 2 in Edinburgh the very first time, it was on by the play
number two,
right.
Became a film, a New Zealand
yeah,
film.
So it's the very first time it was ever been on anywhere.
Yeah,
and I can't even remember the playwright's name. Actually, it starts with T.
Toa Fraser.
Yes. And just being away from New Zealand and seeing a play like that performed in Edinburgh just kind of added to it. And me and my friend were in bits afterwards.
You were in bits.
We were crying, we're
both
socks like that, but you know,
in
that kind of moment. But it was just like, you know, so overwhelming. So,
well, yeah. So it's funny, I feel I need to see it again. That was the barbecue in the elderly woman's house. Oh, well, we can't really cover it now, but maybe everybody needs to go.
How many characters was it she was playing?
She was playing.
Yeah, she was playing. Oh. She played all the characters in Edinburgh. So she,
yeah, in
that
the
was
film,
a moving
she was
part,
just the old
you know,
person.
So, yeah, that's right. She might have been, I think she might have been seven characters.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty moving. But it's just so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
I can see why you do it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy and...
It's so fun, isn't it? Like putting on a play.
It's fun and intense, and it's immensely social, which is, I think, one of the main reasons I'm attracted to theater. Because I don't know, I enjoy writing a lot, but I mostly like making things with people. So a lot of my writing is pretty collaborative, and I do a lot of devised theater. And even when I write a play, I'll workshop it with some actors and a director, and it just changes so much depending on like how the actors read it, and then I'm like, okay, so what do you think here? And I really like incorporating all those voices, because I always find that what we can make together is so much greater than something I could make by myself,
right?
Exactly. And I really love that feeling of, you know, communicating something with an audience that comes from us, and especially if that audience feels like it's made for them, right? That it's not like made for us and like we're up here and playing. It's like, you know, it's something that's can bring all of us together in a room, which is really hard these days, I think partially because of, phones, right? And social media. And I think our connection to other people often comes from just seeing images of things, which you can't...
it's not enough.
Like, believe in a way. Like,
You can't touch.
You can't touch. I don't know. It just, like, I don't think it makes me feel better, right? Like, I think it makes me feel distanced, if anything.
Yeah.
And but I think, like, the times that I felt closest to people, it's, like, through this experience of, you know, art together. Or I used to be part of a choir and, like, singing with people. And I don't tend to get very emotional as a person, but, like, man, sometimes I just be like, what? Like, like this is, I don't know, uncontrollable feelings happening. And I don't know. I like other people. I like people.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I love people.
That has got to be held on to in the face of more and more fear of going outside because you might get shot at the mall or, you know, something like that.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, we have to make sure that...
At the Foursquare.
Yeah. Make sure that doesn't ever take hold.
Yeah.
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 Gloom and doom, sorry.
So, yeah.
So, uplifting time now.
Yeah.
So...
Do you want
to... Come to the festival.
I don't know if...
I was going to ask if you... How you think New Zealand will actually... go with you in your journey to continue in drama? Like, if you go back to the States, if there's any sort of, you know, kind of technical aspects or cultural aspects which are particularly different that you've found?
It's hard to say exactly. For a few reasons. I mean, I find it very difficult to... like digest an experience while I'm inside of it, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Yep. Totally.
I don't know what I want to do after this. Mm-hmm. So I feel quite, I really, really love New Zealand. I think I have a much better work-life balance here in general, and like I have a pretty good life here, I think.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot in terms of lifestyle for sure. I think in America, there's this sense of, like, if you're a good person, you work hard, and if you work hard, you have a lot of money. So it's like,
yeah, that's right.
You know, it translates to, like, if you're a good person, you have a lot of money, which isn't true. It's just valuing kind of the wrong thing. And I think in America, I always felt, I don't know, pressure to succeed in a way that didn't feel like it came from me, like, in a deep place. It
has to come from deep inside you, doesn't
it?
Yeah,
like, if I want to make something, I want to make something because, like, I want to make it, not because I'm, you know, seeking fame or money or something like that.
Exactly, that's right.
You know?
Yeah,
and,
I totally relate.
And here it's, like, working with people, I find that I'm able to have more conversations about, like, okay, like, what do we want to do? What do we want to make? Like, what, with my students, you know, like, what kinds of stories do you want to tell? What's important?
And also with that, you sort of take the money factor away oftentimes, don't you?
Well, I mean, you can go to Auckland or something, which is you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but in my head is kind of like New Zealand's only, like, official big city. Like, it's the only place that I go in New Zealand where,
and it's,
like,
a small city internationally.
Yeah, it is.
Very small.
And
but it's very spread out. So,
but you don't have really, like, I grew up in Los Angeles, and I was working in Boston and New York quite a bit. And it just feels very different. And the people I knew, it was like, they're my friends, but I also felt this, like, slight sense of competition too, in a way where like, you want to, like, stay with your contemporaries almost, if that makes sense. And here, maybe it's because I'm just so removed from the people I went to school with and everything like that. But I feel like, I guess, just less societal pressure, if that makes sense. So I think one of the things, if I do go back to America, like, I'll try to retain that sense of, pursuing art for a reason that, you know, is, I don't know, connected to just asking myself, like, what kind of things do I want to see and can I make them?
Right.
Which I think is what, well, at least for me, like, where I want to come from in terms of creation. Not like, what do I think is going to, like, be edgy and interesting and, like, get me fancy awards.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Get made into a film. That sounds good. And I think there might have been a time when I would have imagined, you know, it was because you have to pay so much to live in the cities, LA and New York. But in truth, Auckland probably is just as bad, really. So
yeah, it's pretty expensive to live in Auckland.
I mean, certainly if you want to buy a house or something, which, I mean,
even
you just
if you
don't
want to rent a house.
Yeah, that's right. You just don't even think about it.
Rent a sheep.
Well, I never imagined I would own a house. I mean, I was in Toronto. It was just, who does that? Nobody, or very few people. But, you know, here I do.
Yeah, here, like, people my age. I'm 29 years old.
Yeah.
So, people my age are like, yeah, I'm buying a house. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
In the
you
States,
can do it.
It's like you can barely rent something.
Yeah.
Like, that's the most adult thing I can think of.
Yeah.
And in
my
head, like, adults are like 35, 40 years old now because you can't possibly afford to, like, have a house and children and stuff until that age in those cities. But
it's a different dream, though. Do you think it's a different dream than, you know, the American dream's different than the New Zealand dream in that way?
Well, but I don't know what is the New Zealand dream, because I never felt like that was. People would say, you know, that quarter acre section thing.
Yes, that's it.
But I was always a bit surprised to hear that, because even though certainly you can buy a house more readily, it didn't seem like everybody was obsessed with it.
No, we're not an art circle so much.
Maybe.
You know, in a general populist kind of a way. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hence why we have the housing problem that we have.
Is a quarter acre section big enough to have a sheep or a goat?
I mean, it is, but sheep actually like to run around. They like lots of space. They deserve to have lots of space.
They do.
Yeah,
okay.
Hang out with all their buddies.
Yeah, maybe goats? Goats are kind of human oriented. Could you have a goat?
I think they're aggressive.
Very much so.
Well, yeah, they can be.
And they eat all the flowers.
Yeah. My friend's goats used to open the window when he was out, and he'd come home and they'd be sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, hey.
What do you think in there, Barris?
You're looking I'll pass at it to you.
Oh,
choose a song.
Then? Oh, okay. I'm thinking
it might not be the right cover, so just actually.
But Amanda maybe has a song in
actually,
her
it's not,
mind.
It's not.
Oh, okay. What is that, Tally Ho?
Maybe we'll play something. Yeah.
We've got some New Zealand music right here. That is
also probably.
You get to choose.
It's nice to. Yeah, I was going to say it's getting the guests to choose a song. We were a bit slack because we didn't really do that with you, but. Yeah, but do you have a favorite New Zealand band or anything at the moment, or just out of curiosity?
I kind of like, well, the Shambles no longer shamble.
Right.
I believe.
Yeah, I don't think.
But I went to one of their shows last year, and I really like the Shambles. Ah. I like Marlon's Dreaming as well. Isn't the Chills are playing somewhere soon, no?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I like
Fat
Freddy's,
they're playing on the
Vogel Street
party, which is coming up, actually.
Oh, really?
So that must
can
be...
Can I go to that?
Is yes,
like someone over...
Oh, yeah, it's like everybody. It's one of those daytime open street things, so children...
Oh, it's not... Oh, I'm thinking of, like, the university street parties,
oh,
which is not at all what that's I...
That's a different one. Hyde Street.
Hyde Street, and there's another one. There's, like, another party that happens now. I don't know. Anyway, Vogel Street Party. That sounds great.
Yeah, Vogel Street Party for everybody.
The Chills. Yeah, that would be cool.
So they're definitely playing there. Yeah, there'd probably be about, I'd say there'd be roughly 20 bands playing. So.
Cool.
But isn't that more of the summertime thing?
It's nearly summer.
Yeah, but is it like two,
November,
3 months away?
It might be November.
Oh, okay. Well,
think,
all right. That still feels
distant
to me.
I've got an invite to it already on
Facebook.
Really?
So. Oh, okay. Well, they're getting it together early.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, well, it's always... organize well in advance. So choose a lucky number.
I'm gonna go 3 or 9. I'll give you a choice.
Three.
All right.
Okay. Let's see what happens.
Oh,
So we're back after having some pretty lengthy discussions.
But tell us what that song was. Because it got chosen by number. Oh, yes. We don't know because we have the wrong CD box. Oh, well, okay, forget it.
We were talking about literature in particular and, you know, drama, how it's actually the sort of things that are inherently belong to that area and, you know, the things that...
To the country,
right. Yeah, that's where the conversation started.
Yeah.
And, I was asking about, you know, whether you could see that with New Zealand playwrights and, indeed, if you could talk about it from your own perspective.
Yeah, definitely. So, new play development in New Zealand kind of followed the example of new play development in America, which was asking the question of, you know, what is essentially American? What belongs to this land? What are the issues that... you know, we deal with, and I think in America a lot of plays seem to me to be about like immigrant life or racial tension or like gentrification and things like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the plays I've read in have been developed in New Zealand, which again kind of follow that example of asking questions of, you know, what is a typical New Zealand play have to do with kind of like Maori life or sometimes immigrant life or sexuality very often, connection with the land. There's a lot of playing with time. So I'm not really an expert in Maori theater at all, but when I first came over here, I asked the department if they could recommend some things to me. So I read a bunch of New Zealand theater and I really enjoyed it. Mm. And a lot of it seemed to... play a little bit with structure, time, space, connection with nature a lot more than American plays that I had been a part of.
Mm.
I guess also dealing with a couple of the plays deal with Samoan or Fijian immigrants as well to New Zealand. So also kind of echoing a lot of the American plays in terms of like, okay, well, we came here for a better life and what is that? And you know, maybe we miss our homeland and who are we now that we're in a different place, which is a really hard question to answer, I think. And, you know, I think especially now, I mean, I'm in a country that I wasn't born in, right? Like people move around a lot and it's much easier to. And how do you maintain all of the different parts of you of, you know, your ancestry, your family history, where you grew up and...
Yeah, and you can end up with a cultural kind of tapestry, can't you, in terms of your own travels and your own places that you've put your feet down. And
Yeah,
and it's all relative. Like, I mean, certainly, like, if you do go back to the States, you'll end up, you know, carrying something from New Zealand with you.
Yeah.
Inside of you that, you know, that will never leave.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I've spent quite a bit of time here now. I think I came over initially for a year, and then I was like, nah. I really enjoy it here. Yeah.
Do you imagine you could ever live here forever? Like, you know, what if you fell in love and married somebody or, you know, something like that? I mean, it doesn't even have to be that way anymore, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do have a New Zealand partner who actually met in the States, I think, 7 years ago.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so one of the reasons I applied for the job was because one day we were Skyping and he's like, why don't you just find a job in New Zealand? And I looked up, like, dramaturgy.
Yeah.
And the day before, the university had posted an ad looking for a dramaturgy and playwriting fellow. So I was like, oh, wait, I'm those things.
Yeah.
So I applied and it's kind of worked out. But he's also an American citizen, so...
His family
immigrated here when he was 4. So.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. I think for me, I always have to like work and make stuff. I'm kind of like a border collie. Like I'm very like task oriented, and if I'm not making and doing something, I just go crazy. So
that's like me too.
So if I don't have like some projects and stuff, I can't. It's not just about money. It's about like my head. Like I would drive everyone crazy around me if I. You know. So.
Well, you would find you would find something.
Yeah.
You would do something.
But I think I don't know. I'm a pretty like flexible person. So I usually just kind of see what happens and try not to worry about stuff too much. But I also find myself still quite curious about culture and life here, because I think even if you're here for, I guess, because I left for 6 months, so I guess if you put my time together, I've been here for 2 years, which seems like a lot, but isn't. You know,
how it's much not very long, but actually, in another country, it actually is.
It is. Yeah.
Because it's the everyday thing. You know, you're dealing with everyday life every day for 2 years. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it definitely gets sunk into your cells a bit more. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, still a lot of things I find that I'm like learning just in terms of. I don't know, sometimes it's silly, just different words that people use or just noticing different kinds of questions that people ask. So kind of what we were talking about before, the cultural differences. Like, I just noticed that, you know, when you meet someone for the first time in New Zealand, they don't ask you, like, what do you do in terms of what's your job?
Right.
They'll be like, hey, like, what are you into? You know, just kind of who are you?
Yeah.
And
I remember that experience as well. But it was interesting because that was a case in Dunedin. But in Wellington, people were asking me, what do you do?
So maybe it's not a New Zealand thing. It's just like a city not.
Probably, yeah, because you need to have more money in Wellington. So chances are you have to be doing something. Or maybe because it's a government town, people want to know if you're government or non-government. And if you're not, hooray, you know, or something
not,
like that.
I think it's kind of a standard way of asking, of like trying to broaden the conversation into realms that are outside of where you are right now.
Well, sure.
And why, if you know what I mean? It's a funny thing to answer. I don't even know what to say.
You mean when asked, what do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. For money.
Well, I guess when people say, what do you do? They're asking, what do you do for money?
Yeah, but maybe not. Maybe, you know, I guess that's the thing. If you just tell them what you actually do, and then they can determine from that, you know, get their own feeling about whether that means money or not.
They might be able to enlighten us.
yeah. I'm on a benefit.
What was it word before that new word?
Dramaturgy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I first moved here, which was 93, a lot more people were on the benefit in my circles, or it just maybe in general, you know, or maybe we were too young or something. But anyway, that was definitely a normal situation.
Well, I mean, in that situation, I mean, whether you're on the benefit or not on the benefit, I mean, that situation is present everywhere, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
you know.
It is.
Yeah, so.
But I guess, like, you know, yeah, it just depends how prevalent it is in your actual friend group or culture or something like that. But I think it was probably less of a problem then, I guess. Easier to be on.
More common.
Benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, not anymore. Or at least I don't know it to be. Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. Going over to the States, like the States, you know, doesn't have that system, but at all, does it? It doesn't have the same system that New Zealand has in the first place. So that's like a cultural difference.
Well, yeah, you can be on like social welfare or something
for
like
a certain
that.
Period of time, I think.
You have to have evidence that you're looking for work.
Yeah.
But I think it's worse. Like most of our government support systems are worse in the States. I think in terms of education and healthcare.
Mm.
So we don't have anything like ACC. I mean, if you don't have good insurance and you're in an accident, you're kind of
that's
you know
right.
tens of thousands of dollars of you know
yeah,
in debt.
Exactly.
So
That's just crazy.
I quite appreciate ACC. There's some things I do here as in terms of I went to the physio, which I never would have done in the States because I realized I was like, oh yeah, I had a minor injury and all I have to do is say that happened and ACC covers it and then someone can tell me what I can do to fix my muscle. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Very good.
It is. It is. And you didn't have to just research it online or something like that. Yeah.
I just went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
anyway, No, it's
and that's a population thing too, isn't it?
Well, is it?
Well, it's a budget smaller, you know, a welfare budget smaller, obviously, for 4 million people than it is for.
But then why aren't we able to get more for our money than, I mean, the States is full of people. They should be, you know, it should be a very rich government that can dole money out like Denmark or something. But nope, it's not how they roll.
Yeah, I think, I could probably rant about why America doesn't function for a super long time.
Yeah, well.
I mean, there's obviously a lot of problems regarding immigration and stuff like that. And a lot of things are very expensive in the States in terms of what the government needs to spend money on.
Mm. Plays.
Plays. They should
plays.
Spend,
they should spend all their money
the
on
arts.
Plays and
yes.
the arts.
Yeah.
Yep.
It would be great if there was more arts funding in the States as well.
There's, it's all about being
we're just about to go
know,
off here.
Rich
yeah,
families.
Okay.
Oh, thanks so much, Amanda, for coming.
Yeah.
And have a good festival, short play festival, UNESCO festival
what's
today.
The, what's the
starting.
Site again?
So it's playfest2019.shed.com.
So that's S-C-H-E-D.
Yeah.
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 Thanks.
Great. Excellent. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Take RFM Dunedin with you wherever you go with podcasts and live streaming of Primo local content. Download the Access Internet Radio app for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store.
This program was first broadcast on RFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.